compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. The phone number is 888-914-9149. I know you regulars have the number on speed dial. That's great. But for all the newbies, if you're just discovering this program, maybe you just heard about it, the number is 888-914-9149. Cyrus, could you use an extra $100?
Yeah. You got $100 for me?
There's $100 on the table.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
You'll love this. I think a lot of people will love it. We have some audio from El Presidente, President Biden, who is offering $100 to anyone who will get fully vaccinated.
Oh, well, should I?
Did that what if change I've already things
been,
for you?
Well, what if I've already been vaccinated? Can I still get my $100?
No money for you.
What?
Yeah. This is for people who haven't yet been vaccinated. So if you having done the patriotic thing, having done the noble duty and gotten vaccinated, there's no reward for you. But for the people who have been holding out, there's $100 on the table. Let's listen to what President Biden said on this issue.
States like New Mexico, Ohio, and Colorado are offering similar incentive programs that have helped increase vaccination rates. So today, I'm calling on all states and local governments to use funding they have received, including from the American Rescue Plan, to give $100 to anyone who gets fully vaccinated. I know the pain people who get vaccinated might sound unfair to folks who've gotten vaccinated already. But here's the deal. If incentives help us beat this virus, I believe we should use them. We all benefit.
I have an idea, Cyrus. I was thinking about you and all the people. I have an idea. I really do. I think we can game the system. All you have to do, if you've been fully vaccinated, everybody listen, if you've been fully vaccinated, because this is how the world works now. So you might as well take advantage of the new rules. If you've already been fully vaccinated, then just self-identify as not having been vaccinated. And they can't argue with you because that's your own personal preference. Science be damned, right? You don't have to, science schmience. Who cares what the science says? If you personally identify as not having ever been vaccinated, then you should roll up and collect your $100 and get vaccinated again.
What would you
Problem
call
solved.
What would you call yourself?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of a catchy name, a double vax.
That works.
No, that's not catchy. Somebody sent me something yesterday. Transvaxite. It's like as if it were a new entry in the dictionary, a transvaxite, a person who identifies as having been vaccinated, even though they haven't actually been vaccinated. And somebody might say, I've decided I'm a transvaxite. Vaccination is a spectrum, and you are a bigot if you don't accept me for who I am. I've never met a transvaxite before that I know of. But all I'm saying is if it can go in that direction, why can't it go in the other direction? Why can't you just identify as never having been vaxxed? Who cares about the science anyway? And then collect your money.
Well, apparently there's not a database, so what's going to prevent me from just saying I'm not vaccinated and going and collecting $100?
I like how you put "there's not a database" in air quotes with your fingers.
You saw that? You
I did. Yeah. There's not a database. Of course, there's no database. Why on earth would the government want to track people or put them into categories? That's ridiculous. And I put the word "ridiculous" in air quotes. Okay, so $100 is on the table, literally, for any of you who want to get vaccinated. And I presume that you probably would not be successful if you tried to use gender ideology on this one. Try to use the rules of gender ideology on this, and you're probably not going to be successful. The CDC, for its part, has issued a notification. This is an internal memo. It was issued to people on the inside. It hasn't been made public yet, except it's now public. So here's what it said. An unpublished, this is from Axios, unpublished research indicates that the Delta variant causes more severe illness and spreads as easily as chickenpox, and that vaccinated people may transmit the strain as easily as those who are unvaccinated. I mean, we're back at square one now. I mean, if the Delta variant causes, it's almost like a different disease, I guess. I mean, it's a variant, but It is more virulent, apparently, and vaccinated people may transmit the strain as easily as those who are unvaccinated. So keep in mind all of the hatred and opprobrium that is reserved for the unvaxxed people. And yet, those who are vaccinated, they can pass it on just as easily, according to an internal CDC presentation that was obtained by the Washington Post, courtesy of Jeff Bezos. The data played a key role in the CDC's decision to tell vaccinated people to resume masking indoors, with the presentation calling on health officials to acknowledge the war has changed. The document affirms that vaccines provide substantial protection against serious illness and death, but warns that mild breakthrough cases may be more common than previously thought. The Post article says it stresses the daunting communication challenges that this new phase could bring as the agency looks to convince a skeptical public of the effectiveness of the vaccines while moving the goalposts of success in full public view. So that's the Washington Post, which is about as far left as you can get, accusing the CDC of moving the goalposts. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky briefed members of Congress on much of the data on Thursday, and the agency is expected to release it in full today, except you can get it now if you want to. So tied in with this now is the administration is pushing, I mentioned this cash reward to get vaccinated. It has also issued some new rules for federal workers. If you're a federal worker, this applies to you. President Joe Biden yesterday urged local officials and local governments to pay people to get vaccinated and set new rules regarding federal workers having to provide proof of vaccination or face regular testing, mask mandates, and travel restrictions. The measures are the administration's latest attempt to spur reluctant Americans to get vaccinated as the Delta variant of the coronavirus surges nationwide, infecting unvaccinated people in particular. That's not what the CDC says. The CDC says that it's just as easy for vaccinated people to pass it on, to get it and pass it on. Ha ha. Did you see the goalposts moving when I said that, Cyrus? They moved them a couple feet in the other direction.
This is exhausting.
Just wait. By the end of the show, the goalposts will have moved again.
Yeah. It's, a friend sent me a stupid meme, and it was like, said, to defeat the Delta variant, experts recommend doing all the things that didn't work the first time.
Which, you know, in a perverse sort of way, you know, it might wind up being true in a roundabout way. It's hard to know. We already played the one... President Biden audio. Is there any point in playing the second one on this topic? I know there's more information, but...
You know, I think I've heard enough from him today.
Yeah. Okay, schools. Cyrus, this affects you because you've got school-age kids. The Biden pandemic strategy is coming under scrutiny as the Delta variant spreads and many Americans resist taking the vaccine. By the way, this is reportage from Reuters. Growing outbreaks could have an impact on the strong economic recovery. The U.S. economy grew at an annualized rate of 6.5% in the last quarter. Another issue is how this surge in Delta variant infections will affect children and getting back to school in the fall. This affects a huge number of people. We can and we must open schools this fall full-time, Biden said. We can't afford another year out of the classroom. He pressed school districts to hold at least one pop-up vaccination clinic in the coming weeks to get children 12 and older vaccinated. The White House also said small and medium-sized businesses will be reimbursed for offering their workers paid time off to get children and other family members vaccinated. The National Treasury Employees Union, which has 150,000 federal employees in 34 departments and agencies, said it encourages its members to get vaccinated, but had questions about the new rules and how they would be implemented. And that's a big question for parents, especially because it looks as though going back to school will involve the kids being back in masks again, not to mention the specter of children now being mass vaccinated.
That's so disheartening.
You know, it used to be in a kinder, simpler time, Cyrus, all parents had to worry about was bulletproof backpacks for their kids going to school. Remember those simpler times?
Simpler times, yeah.
Life was just simpler. And, you know, there'd be the run on bulletproof backpacks at Target. And I'm not joking about that. Those are real items where you could actually purchase. You still can. I mean, what a horrible thing school shootings are, but this is, it's just like one thing after another. So my heart goes out to you parents as you're trying to navigate these changing waters in terms of what's required and what's not required. And school starts opening in, what, about 2-3 weeks now, roughly,
yeah,
for most
right.
people?
Yeah, my heart's going out to these kids. I feel so bad for them. And mm-hmm. It's already so hard being a young teenager. And it's just it's too much to ask these kids. But
you know, one thing I have heard from parents, all my kids are all grown up now. So, I mean, they have kids of their own. But one thing I've heard from any number of parents is that wearing the mask all day for the kids was a real morale problem. And more than anything else, I think more than any physical problems it may have caused, was just the kids, it just really wore on them mentally and emotionally to be wearing a mask all the time. You can't be a normal kid doing normal kid things because everybody's in a mask. I could see that.
Yeah, and from the isolation last year to the mask to the school not being in session for half the year, and then when they go back, it wasn't even really school. It was pretty much 2 years wasted so far. Mm. And what's the mental toll that this is having on our kids?
That's what I wonder about.
Me too.
Have your kids? I mean, not to get too personal, because I realize family is family. But if you're comfortable on this, Cyrus, if not, just say. But if you're comfortable, what was it like for your kids in the last year, especially at the height of COVID-19, in terms of things like that? I mean, did they?
Well, my son.
Did they share with you how they felt?
He's turned 14 to 15, and the kid is just a bubble of happiness. He's just really goofy. He's kind of like a Jim Carrey in a little, you know, in a kid body.
I know where he gets it.
And I saw depression creep in. And, you know, sadness and wanting to just kind of hide away. And I'm seeing it in my other daughters who are younger. And I'm really scared of is like we got through it and everything's okay, but I don't think we can do it again. So if another lockdown is coming, we're pretty healthy and you were a pretty normal family. Mm-hmm. And so for the kids that are really...
I like how you put a qualifier in there.
Yeah, there was some quotations
just to hedge your bets.
Yeah. But I mean, the kids that grew up like I did that were from a single family or a single parent family that we were the parents gone all the time, and I don't know how they do it. I'm really scared for those kids that aren't as privileged mm-hmm. as my own.
What... If you don't mind, what you mentioned, you saw little hints of depression creeping in. What were some of those signals? And I ask you this for the benefit of parents listening right now, who will want to be on alert to see if anything like that pops up with their kids. And it doesn't have to be specific.
Yeah,
just kind of like general markers or whatever. What caused you to raise your eyebrows when you saw?
Everybody
stuff?
Knows their kid. You know, you spend enough time with them. There's just little tells from body language. To a decrease in jokes, to like choosing to become disassociated with yourself by staring at a screen as mm-hmm. much as possible.
Escapism, kind
escapism,
of?
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And escapism.
Thanks.
And some escapism.
Escapism.
No. Yeah, that's right. Escapism.
Hey, I got it. See.
Okay. Good. Good.
All right. And you could say, well, all kids are, you know, doing that. They're all jumping into their Xbox and. There's these little, you can see the signs, you know, mm-hmm. if you're observant, you'll see them.
So that's very important stuff. So now that you've shared some of those tells with parents, what was your personal remedy for that? When you saw that happening, what did you and your wife do kid-wise to try to, you know, buck them up or get them out of themselves? Or did you have any techniques that you used or you know, what?
I wish I had some secret answer. I have no idea what I'm doing, Patrick. I'm flying by the seat of my pants as a parent.
Aren't most parents? and I think most parents feel that way. We have a general idea, pretty good general sense of it. But when you get down to the granular stuff, there are times when, you say, I honestly don't know what the right thing to do is in this situation.
Yep, I'm constantly second-guessing myself, and it's like, well, I'm allowing him to look at his phone too much.
Don't get me started on the phone.
I know, and don't get me started either. Yeah. And that's a battle I lost in my household.
Yeah.
Just love them. Love your kids. Give them hugs, even though, you know, they pretend not to like it. Mm-hmm. You know, just shower them with love and I mean, that's, we're here. I keep telling my kids, like, I'm here for you. You know, there's no one. I think you said it a couple days ago. And I really liked it. I'm here for you. Like, I don't want anything from you. I just,
role of parents.
Yeah, I really like that.
You're the two people on the face of this earth who don't want or need anything from that child. You're not trying to get anything from the child. There's no benefit to you. You just love them because they're your kids. And you, all the other people in the world may have some vested interest, but you don't, other than you want them to be happy.
I love that. I think that's so great. And you know what my son said when I said that to him?
What's that?
He said, well, you want me to take out the garbage.
That's for your benefit, not mine. That's right. This hurts me more than it hurts you.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
I've heard them all. No, but I do believe that's true. And for every parent listening right now, I want to encourage you. You're hearing what Cyrus is saying. You're probably no different than anyone else, and your kids are human like everyone else. So if you notice, if we do go back to the bad old days, or even worse, with lockdowns and, God forbid, you know, everybody's wearing masks again, it's looking like it's going in that direction because of the Delta variant. Pay close attention to your children. I know you already do. I know. But just a little word of encouragement. Just have your radar up so that if you see those little signs, that you'll be in a better position to help out and help them along in a difficult situation like that. That's good information, Cyrus. Thank you for sharing that. I realize it's personal, but thank you for that. To the phones, let's go to Jose in South Texas. Hi, Jose.
Hello, Patrick.
Yeah, hi.
So I'm calling you because I want to share my opinion on the, what's going on with all this of the vaccines.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't been vaccinated. I feel it goes against my conscience to take the vaccines, but at the same time, I do want to get vaccinated because I can feel the pressure. I feel the pressure from my peers. Now the government, thank God I live in Texas, so the governor is not making us get vaccinated, and I work for the state.
I think, didn't Governor DeSantis issue an order or a rule of some sort saying that it's illegal for cities in Texas to require the vaccination? I think I saw something about that yesterday. Does that sound right to you?
I think so. That's Governor Abbott from Texas.
DeSantis
is in Florida.
He's Florida. That's right. I meant Abbott. That's what I meant.
Yes, yes. So that's good. You know, great news for me. But see, I mean, I just don't want to get vaccinated. I'm waiting for the Novavax. Hopefully, it gets approved.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the point. Let's talk about the point you raised about in conscience. You know, you in conscience said it goes against your conscience to take the vaccine, and I can understand that. But let's look at that for just a moment. Your conscience is that function, or it's the operation of your soul that tells you whether or not something is good or bad. And the more informed you are, the better your conscience is formed, the more accurate it will be. And sometimes one's conscience can give a false reading and say that this is wrong when in fact it's not, or that this is okay when in fact it's not. But generally speaking, your conscience is warning you about something as being either good or bad. And the way you can look at this clinically would be to take three sources of an act, the three foundation or fonts, as the theologians call them, of a human act, and analyze it through all three lenses. So the first of the three fonts is the act itself. Is the act in itself intrinsically evil? Say abortion, that's an easy example. It's always and everywhere wrong. There's never a single instance anywhere in any universe at any time where it would be morally permissible to intentionally take the life of an innocent unborn child. So ask yourself this question: is getting a vaccine as such, is that immoral on the face of it? Is there anything evil about it on the face of it? And the answer is no. Okay. Now that would get into some sub areas, such as, well, what about this particular vaccine? Do we have concerns about getting a vaccine that hasn't been fully authorized by the FDA? It hasn't gone through nearly as much of the clinical trials as any other vaccine would before it's brought to market, et cetera, et cetera. Those are all sort of subsections of that main question, which is the act itself immoral? The answer is no. The second font of a moral act would be the circumstances. Under these circumstances, here and now, is doing this thing, this act, do the circumstances warrant it? And I think it can be reasonably argued that, yes, it does. We are in the midst of a confusing, perplexing, mysterious kind of disease outbreak that it's easy to diminish the importance of, and at the same time, it's also easy to exaggerate it. And it seems that maybe the truth of the matter lies somewhere in between. But in any case, it's sufficiently dangerous, it's sufficiently deadly, that the circumstances warrant at least strong consideration of getting the vaccine. So I would say in this particular case, the circumstances do not propose, or they don't pose, rather, any moral dilemma for somebody who says, yeah, I'm going to get the vaccine. Okay, then the third of the three fonts of assessing the morality or immorality of a human act would be the intention. So what is your intention? Now, if your intention is to do something to protect your bodily health or to protect other people as well, that, of course, those two are very good intentions. There's nothing faulty about that. If you, let's say, figured out a way to scam somebody out of money and you could get money out of somebody by fraudulently, you know, this is a fantastical sort of idea, but let's say there was some scenario where you could actually deceive somebody and make a profit on it, well, that would be a bad motive. And then your conscience would say, no, you can't do that because you're doing that in order to get some illicit gain. But in this case, if you're doing it to protect your bodily health and to protect other people, you're not doing anything morally illicit. So if those three factors, those three ingredients of any decision about any moral act that you want to make, if those three get green lights, then you can be morally assured that you're not violating your conscience if you were to do something. Now, you may say, I don't really want to do it. Okay, fair enough. But that's not your conscience. That's not what your conscience is there to do. You may say, I'm afraid of needles. Okay, fair enough. A lot of people are, but that's not your conscience. You may say, I'm scared of the potential side effects, and that too could be a problem. Okay, fair enough. Same thing. All of these are valid reasons for somebody to take a deep breath and stop and think before they do something. But ultimately, those kind of concerns are not arising from your conscience, if that makes sense. Does that help a little bit, Jose, in analyzing this?
It does help, Patrick. May I ask you something else about this?
Sure. I apologize. I have to take a break. Well, this is an important question you raised, Jose, and many people are asking themselves the same question. So thanks for giving us a chance to sort it out just a little bit more. I'll be right back with more right after this.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, longer. Let's do it.
All right, Cyrus. You get a gold star for that one, man.
I need like that.
I love it. I want that on auto repeat forever. Okay, this is good music for this story here. This week in history witnessed a small band of Christian knights, aka Catholic knights, terrify and brutally defeat a massive horde of Muslims. Now, if you're Muslim, I'm sorry. This is history. What can I tell you? This is an article by Raymond Ibrahim in PJ Media. The Battle of Jaffa, when 2,000 Catholic knights defeated 20,000 Muslims. True story. On July 27th, 1192, Saladin, the great Sultan hero of Islam, surrounded and besieged the tiny Christian-held town of Jaffa. Now, when I say Christian, please understand these are all Catholic folk. The original Christianity, of course. This tiny Christian-held town of Jaffa, according to contemporary chronicles, the Muslims numbered as many as 20,000 and covered the face of the earth like locusts. That was the way it was described by somebody who was there. Messengers were instantly dispatched to King Richard I, who was then in Accra, preparing to sail back to England. Before the battered and bruised men had finished relaying their messages, God, with God as my guide, Richard declared, I will set out to do what I can. and instantly disembarked on his fleet with slightly over 2,000 fighters. Jaffa, meanwhile, was fighting for its life. According to Saladin's court historian, Baha al-Din, who was present after one of its walls collapsed, all the Muslims rushed into the city, quote, and there was not an enemy heart that did not tremble and shake. Even so, he said, the Christians were more fierce and determined in the fight and more eager for and devoted to death. When the main gate was finally battered down and an adjoining wall collapsed from the bombardment, a cloud of dust and smoke went up and darkened the sky. Once it cleared, the Muslims saw the spear points had replaced the walls and lances had blocked the breach. Only death would release the crusaders of their charge to defend Jaffa. Due to the great masses of rushing Muslims, the garrison was eventually driven to and holed up in the citadel, even as the sackers turned their attention to Jaffa's civilian populace. Alas for the pitiful slaughter of the sick, recalls one chronicler. They lay weakly on couches everywhere in the houses of the city. The Turks tortured them to death in horrible ways. Richard's fleets finally arrived on the evening of July 31st, but did not disembark. As Baha al-Din explains, the crusaders, quote, saw the town crammed with the Muslims' banners and men, and they feared that the citadel might already have been taken. The sea prevented their hearing the shouts that came from everywhere and the great commotion and cries of "There is no God but Allah." To make matters worse, when the Turks saw the king's galleys and ships, now this is a quote from an eyewitness, when the Turks saw the king's galleys and ships approaching, masses of them ran onto the shore, raining down spears, javelins, darts, and arrows densely so that they would have nowhere free to land. The shore was seething, so covered with crowds of the enemy that there was no empty space left. Then, on the morning of August the 1st, a fighting priest took his chances. He jumped out at the citadel's window into the sea and swam to the fleets. On learning that, although the Saracens had taken the castle and were rounding up the Christians as prisoners, a remnant of the garrison was still holding out. Richard exclaimed that if it so pleased God, we should die here with our brothers. Without donning his full armor, and in the words of the chroniclers, the king armed himself with his hauberk, hung his shield at his neck, and took a Danish axe in his hand. With his crossbow in the other hand, and crying death only to those who do not advance, he hurled himself into the water and forced himself powerfully onto dry land, all the while firing his crossbow at the wild throng assembled along the shore and swiping incoming arrows away with his axe. He must have been very good with that axe. Instantly, the rest of the crusaders followed their king. They hurled themselves into the water and boldly attacked the Turks, who obstinately opposed them on the shore. Before long, at the sight of the king, whom the Muslims dreaded from earlier encounters, none of them dared approach him. Rather, they fled down the shore. A chronicler said, brandishing his bared sword, the king followed in such hot pursuit that none of them dared to defend themselves. They fled from his weighty blows in the same way the king's comrades constantly assailed the fugitives, driving them on, crushing, rending, beheading, and tossing them about until they had been violently expelled from the shore and left it empty. The king fell on them with unsheathed sword, pursued them, and slew them. They fled before him, falling back in dense crowds to his right and left. Once Richard, drenched in blood, became visible to Saladin's entourage, a horrible howl went up. Even as Turkic arrows rained on the Christians, undeterred, their berserker king continued to cut to pieces all he met without distinction. Keep in mind, he's fighting against soldiers. He's fighting against enemy combatants. He's fighting against people who are trying to kill him. In his mad dash up to Saladin, prompting the Sultan to dash like a frightened rabbit, he put spur to his horse and fled before King Richard, not wishing to be seen by him. The king and his fellow knights steadfastly pursued him, continually fighting for more than 2 miles. It was a disorderly retreat and the rout of the most ignoble kind, and it was the most humiliating defeat the great Saladin ever suffered. Indeed, due to his exploits at Jaffa and elsewhere, it is the name Richard the Lionheart that in popular Muslim consciousness most personifies the archetypical crusader enemy to this very day, a testimony to the havoc he wrought single-handedly. Talk about a compelling leader. May I say to you, one thing I'll just add on before we proceed with phone calls, and that is on one of my visits to the Holy Land, we had a Muslim guide. And this was not well thought out. And this was not a pilgrimage that I myself led. This was a pilgrimage that happened with Catholic Answers. And back when I was working at Catholic Answers, so this would have been in the early 90s. And I don't think any thought was given to selecting, you know, a Catholic tour guide as opposed to a Muslim tour guide. But in any case, the tour guide we had in our bus was Muslim. And I'll tell you, this guy was so enthralled of telling us the stories of, you know, Saladin the Great and the, you know, this battle against the Crusaders at the Horns of Hatim. And he would point out these two mountain peaks. And there was this battle between the Crusaders and the Muslims under Saladin. And Saladin won and destroyed the Crusader army. And he was just incandescent with excitement to tell all of us Christian folk about these Muslim victories over the Christian Crusaders. And I have a feeling he probably never tells the busloads of pilgrims the story about Jaffa. Just a guess on that one. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Jacqueline in Miami. Good morning, Jacqueline.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
I'm calling because I wanted to share my family's experience with the vaccine. Mm-hmm. We are not anti-vaxxers, but from the beginning, we've been very hesitant about this particular vaccine. And my brother, unfortunately, folded because of all the social pressure.
He sold it? What do you mean he sold it?
He folded.
Basically,
okay. I see. He folded, yes. And he took the first dose of the Pfizer vaccine two nights ago at 8 p.m. 12 hours later, my brother is no longer with us.
What happened?
He had...
I'm sorry that he died. May he rest in peace. Did he have a sudden severe reaction or something?
He had a sudden, he had chest pains, convulsions, and died. They're doing an autopsy.
May he rest in peace.
Today. Mm-hmm. I just want people to know that the vaccine's not for everybody. If you have a straw, I know Jose called earlier and had concerns, and if your instincts are strong against it for whatever reason, you need to follow that, because to me, hello,
you kind of cut out there, Jacqueline. You said to me and then it cut out.
I'm saying if your instincts are strong against taking this vaccine, then you need to follow that, because to me, that's God's way of telling you, hey, maybe this isn't right for you. You know, not that it's not right for another person, but maybe this is not right for you. And my brother for the whole year we were all against it. Like, no, this is not right for our family. We're going to wait. We don't have enough information. It's not very clear as to what, you know, reaction you may have.
Did he have any underlying health problems, or was he completely healthy when he got the vaccination?
He was completely healthy. He did not smoke. He did not drink alcohol. He was not on any
medication.
How
old was he?
He was 62.
Okay.
Completely healthy man.
Well, you have my sincere condolences. What a terrible thing for your family to have to go through. I hope he was ready to meet the Lord when he died. And it is true. I mean, if you look at a bell curve, statistically speaking, on many things, including this one, you will see that the great preponderance of people will fall in the inside of the bell and will not have those kind of negative consequences or side effects. But there inevitably will be people who will be outside the bell curve who will have those kinds of problems. And, you know, what a horrible thing that your brother happened to be one of those people. From what I understand, however, the vast majority of people are not harmed by it, and that's a blessing in itself. But to your point, people have the freedom, at least right now, to make their decision whether or not to receive the vaccination. It doesn't look as though it's going to be a very easy decision to follow through on in the way that the government and other entities are seeking to make life as miserable as possible for people who, for whatever their reasons are, choose not to get the vaccine. And we'll see how long that lasts. maybe it will at some point no longer be at your own discretion. Maybe it will become mandatory, and I hope it doesn't. But I know a lot of people are pushing in that direction. But at the, for the time being, at least, you definitely have that right to say that you don't want to get it if that's what you seek to do. So prayers for your brother, Jacqueline. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Hans now in Orlando. Hello, Hans.
Yeah, yeah. Hi, Patrick.
Hi.
Yeah, so what's really interesting about what everybody's talking about, what everybody's not talking about, everybody, you know, there's such a push for the vaccine, but the low-hanging fruit is really, I'm thinking, is to boost your immune system. And why is nobody talking about vitamin D? Because most people, or a lot of people, are deficient. And why are, you know, studies have been done. There was a study in Indonesia where I think it was like something like 20% of people are deficient in vitamin D, but they found that in the COVID cases, 90% of those cases were deficient in vitamin D. So there's there are studies that suggest the importance of keeping your immune system up to snuff. And
yeah,
you know,
I think that's reasonable.
The easiest thing to do is that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's reasonable and common sense to do what you can to have a strong immune system. No question about that. I don't know if having enough vitamin D and vitamin E in your system will be enough to ward off a virulent disease that's highly communicable. I don't know about that. I'm not a scientist, but at the very least, if you have, it seems to me anyway, if you have a good, strong immune system, you're in a better position to deal with an illness than if you didn't have that.
Yeah. So it's just interesting that hardly anybody is talking about it.
Well, look at us. Look at you and me. We're talking about it.
We're talking about it, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we're talking about it.
All right.
No, and there's a whole laundry list of things that you can do, you know, to better your immune system. And, you know,
I'm all about that. Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, but we have to take a break. Thank you, Hans. God bless you. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. And when we come back, I want to share with you something prophetic that Archbishop Fulton Sheen had to say about a crisis that he saw coming in Christendom. I'll tell you what he said right after this. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
If you want to send me a message on Twitter, you'll find me at Patrick Madrid, and I'll be happy to read your question or comment on the air. Lots of people commenting about the issue of, vaccines, Dr. Fauci, etc. Bobbert Mac says on Twitter, Patrick, every time I hear the Delta variant, I hear the song Delta Dawn. Cringe. Yeah, I never liked that song myself. Helen Reddy, I think, sang that. Okay, anyway, Archbishop Fulton Sheen, who died, I believe, in 1979, and he was a fixture in the American Catholic Church for many years, a very wise, erudite, and I believe a very virtuous man who personified the Catholic Church for many years on television, on radio, through his books. He was a really big deal. He had one of the top, if not the top, radio or television program in the country for a time. And there's an article here by Joseph Pronishin, Archbishop Sheen's Warning of a Crisis in Christendom. And I wanted to share it with you. I want to share it with you in its entirety because it's, I believe, prophetic. And you'll probably recognize in what's going on nowadays some of the things that he foretold lo those many years ago. So here it goes. With a saintly, long-ranging spiritual vision, the Venerable Fulton J. Sheen saw the roots of today's crisis firmly planted and growing in 1974, but he gave us an antidote. First of all, Archbishop Fulton Sheen solemnly said during a television show in 1974, "We are at the end of Christendom." Now, not Christianity, not the church. Remember what I'm saying. Christendom, he said, is economic, political, social life as inspired by Christian principles. That is ending. We've seen it die. Look at the symptoms. The breakup of the family, divorce, abortion, immorality, general dishonesty. Now, that was in 1974. I have a feeling you'd agree with me that things have gotten much worse in the time since then. So back to the article. He reminded that of 22 civilizations that have decayed since the beginning of the world, 19 rotted and perished from within. Archbishop Sheen said, "We live in it from day to day, and we do not see the decline. We take it for granted. We get used to things and almost accept them as the rule." He pointed out, "The press that we read, the television that we see, is in no instance inspired by Christian principles. As a matter of fact, there is on the part of many of us the tendency to go down to meet the world, not to lift the world up. We are afraid of being unpopular, so we go with the mob." The church, he said, is not a continuing thing. It dies and rises again. It proceeds on the principle of Christ himself as priest and victim. And there comes the defeat, the seeming decay. We are put in the grave, and then we rise again. We have had four deaths in our Christian history. And here's an elucidation of what he means. The article says, "The first time the church was in dire straits was in the fall of Rome, the first 500-year period. It had a rebirth when great saint missionaries like Augustine in England and Patrick in Ireland spread the faith. Then came a second decay around the year 1000. With the Muslim invasions and the split of the church with a schism in Constantinople." Archbishop Sheen said, "It seemed to be the end of everything. And then we come to life again. In the third 500-year period, as he said, the church became rotten as nuns and priests were defecting. Then came the reformers who, quote, almost always reformed the wrong things," Archbishop Sheen said, "and they began reforming the faith, and there was nothing wrong with the faith. It was the morals that needed to be reformed. It's not renewal, it's really a moral reformation that is needed today too." He said, "And now we're at the fourth period, and we're rotting, we're spoiled. No great zeal, no great learning, no great fire. And yet there's hope because anyone who knows history is not particularly disturbed." And then he's speaking about the church's enemies here. He says, "But the enemy in each of the 500-year periods has been separate and distinct. We had, and here I am speaking generally of enemies within the church, in the first 500 years, false doctrines centering around the person of Christ, the Christological heresies. So the church was just split open, and that was one of the reasons that made it possible for Muslims to develop. The next period saw attacks on the head of the church, leading to the Eastern Church breaking away. By the 16th century, the attack was on the body of Christ, the mystical body of the church. It was Reformation time. And then he talks about today's fourth enemy. Our enemy today, Archbishop Sheen said, is the world and the spirit of the world. Today we have to conform to the world or we're branded. Our Lord said, 'I have taken you out of the world.' We say, 'No, we have to win the world. And to win it, you have to be one with it.' Our Lord says, 'I pray not for the world.' He was praying for the spirit of the world. And this is the easiest way to fall off the log. Worldliness. It's so simple. And it can be justified for a thousand reasons. Namely, the Vatican Council said, we have to go into the world, indeed, but not to be worldly, which is quite a different matter. So this is our attack today." Archbishop Sheen said that one of the basic causes of our degeneration, of our death, we are dying. What about it? What's the answer? The answer, he said, is, "These are great and wonderful days in which to be alive. I thank God that I can live in these days because these are days of testing." Again, remember, he said this in 1974. He said the atmosphere was Christian, morals were Christian, and he's talking about decades before the time he was speaking here. There was no great problem in adapting ourselves to a Christian society, but now when everything is turned around, these are days when the masks have got to come off. We must reveal ourselves just as we really are. Today the current is against us, and today the mood of the world is, go with the world, go with the spirit. Listen, dead bodies float downstream, he said. Only live bodies resist the current, and so the good Lord is testing us. And he is testing Western Christians with worldliness, and how many of us are falling? Can you imagine what Archbishop Sheen would make of 2021 by comparison to 1974? He said, that is what he is doing to us. We are showing what we really are now. St. John says in his epistle, they did not love us really from the beginning. That is why they left us. And so the souls that are falling away have just failed to meet the test. It is very much like the test that the Jews had. He said, the majority is not always right. He said, what we are going to have in the church is a minority report of sisters, a minority report of priests, a minority report of laity, not the minority that is aggressive and troublemaking, but the minority that, like Caleb and Joshua, trusts in God. So we are tested just as the Jews were tested. Not far after our time, and perhaps in the time of some, then will come the battles and the testing. Our Lord said, Satan will sift you as wheat, and we are being sifted as wheat. So we can all thank God that we live in these days. Really, it's beautiful. Now we can say aye or nay, and we can bear up under assault, criticism, and ridicule, because this is the lot of the Christians in the days of the spirit of the world. Now, he had a few other comments. He said that the situation is not really gloomy. Remember, we had a caller yesterday, I think it was, and she was complaining that, you know, what she heard on the show was just scaring people and doom and gloom. Well, I wish I had had Archbishop Fulton Sheen here on the microphone to respond to it. But this is what he said back in 1974. He says it's not gloomy. Why? Because it's a picture of the church in the midst of increasing opposition from the world. And therefore, live your lives in the full consciousness of this hour of testing and rally closer to the heart of Christ. And if there is anything that has to be restored in our day, I would say it would be violence. And you're saying, what? Violence. He said, the kingdom of heaven is won by violence, and only the violent shall conquer it. He observed how in the church, how when the church drops things, the world picks them up, but twists them in the wrong way. For example, mysticism drops and the young turn to drugs. He says, and we drop violence, discipline, commitment to the cross, and the world picks it up. That's why there's no stopping the violence of this country. We have to hire more police guards, build more hospitals for the addicts. Why? Because there's no moral reason on the inside why they should stop. And of course, I think it goes without saying, you recognize that he's not referring to violence like harming people. He's referring to you being violently against sin, violently in favor of virtue, violently using the expression in that sense. He's not referring to violence in a harmful sense. He said, our blessed Lord said, I have come to bring the sword, not peace. We are always talking about peace, peace, peace. Yes, because that war, World War II, the Korean War, etc., that war happened, but we aren't making war in ourselves, and there's not going to be any peace in the world until we make war. Our Lord said, I have not come to bring peace, but the sword. He never used the word peace until after Easter. The Lord brought a sword, Fulton Sheen said. It's not the sword that's thrust outward against the enemy. It's a sword that's thrust against ourselves, cutting out the seven pallbearers of the soul, pride and covetousness and lust and anger, envy, gluttony and sloth. And we've given up the sword. Someone else has taken it up and we have to restore it. Then we'll get peace. And peace is never corporate. It's never social until it's first individual. So you see, again, when he talks about violence and the sword, he's talking about doing that to yourself and being violent against your own sinfulness. Mine too, by the way. Social peace, world peace, is the extension of individual peace in our hearts. When we are right with God, then we will be right with our fellow man. When we are not right with God, then we will be wrong with everyone else. So he told everyone, this is the conclusion here, and we'll get a link posted to this article so you can share it with your friends. I encourage you to share it. He told everyone to take seriously spending an hour before the Lord in the Blessed Sacrament every day, quote, not only for our own souls, but for the world, and to strengthen our minority. It's violence to ourselves, easily enough understood. And in conclusion, Archbishop Sheen emphasized, the Lord is keeping his reserves. He's training us. We'll make the entry. We'll prepare for a new church, and he is with us. We just simply can't add rules, only we've already won, as a matter of fact. Only the news has not yet leaked out. And so it's violence that has to be restored. The late, great Archbishop Fulton Sheen. No wonder he was so powerful and effective in his evangelization efforts. So just to pause on that note for one more moment before we have to take our break. When he refers to violence here, you know, he's asking you to ask yourself, you know, are you violent when it comes to your own sinfulness? Do you stomp on it? Do you go to war against the devil? Or are you complacent? This is a question for me and for you and for Father Aki and Pope Francis and everyone else on planet Earth. If you profess to be a follower of Jesus Christ, this is a question that we each have to ask ourselves. Do you exercise that sword in your own life? And his point simply is, if you're not doing that, if you're not strict with yourself, it doesn't mean you can't have fun. It doesn't mean that you can't eat a nice meal. It doesn't mean any of those things. But are you complacent about the ways in which sin can become sort of a settled issue? Or are you seeking to root those things out? And when you do, when enough of us do, that's when things begin to get better. And the church becomes, so to speak, reborn once again. I'll be right back with more right after this. Please stay right there.